My name is Kurt Thomas, and the work I want to talk about today is how social networks are becoming major targets for censorship, but the tools that are actually enabling this come from the spam ecosystem. So to kind of clue in some skeptics as to why social networks are important in terms of politics, I kind of want to just give a short timeline. So over the past years, we've increasingly seen systems like Twitter and Facebook being used as a tool for political engagement and even political dissent. So we have examples like the Arab Spring, where we saw people actually organizing protests through social media. We also have examples like the White House Town Hall that happened in the US, where anybody could tweet a question to Obama, and with a very small likelihood, he would actually respond to you. But given that this rise of importance of social media in politics is happening, the response in some nations has actually been somewhat chilling. So during the London riots, the British government actually threatened to shut down access to Twitter and Facebook in order to prevent protesters from organizing. In Mexico, because of an absence of reporting about drug violence and a lack of action on the hands of government and the media, users have actually turned to Twitter as a grassroots mechanism for talking about violence, in this case, shootings that are occurring in their neighborhoods. But what's sad about this is that when people move to this medium, the drug cartels are actually targeting these people as well and threatening them with violence for reporting on their actions. So typically when we think of censorship in social media and its growing importance, we think of, say, a nation state disabling access to your network. So during the protests in Egypt, they shut down cell coverage and they shut down internet access. But what I want to talk about today is a different paradigm where we actually have attacks on users coming from within Twitter. And so in particular, I'm going to be talking about one event which involved the Russian parliamentary elections and how thousands of bots were actually used to drown out legitimate political speech. And the goals here were, one, censorship in the sense of diluting legitimate content that people would want information about the election, and then two, almost a sense of astroturfing, where they're sending out this inflammatory remarks to change the way that the hashtags are being talked about. So what's really fascinating about all of this and the big takeaway I want from today is that the infrastructure that enabled this attack actually comes from the spam ecosystem, specifically spam as a service marketplaces. And so what I mean by this are services that sell accounts. So you have something like buyaccounts.com, 1,000 Twitter accounts, $7. All you have to do is have money. You don't have to have the expertise to actually register Twitter accounts, solve CAPTCHAs, or any of those problems. Or proxy services or compromised hosts, where you can simply rent access to hosts when you want to launch your attack and not need the expertise of actually compromising machines. So what we're seeing is this repurposing potentially of these spam as a service markets away from traditional uses such as pharmaceutical spam towards the use of political censorship and preventing people from talking about political events online. So for the rest of this talk, I'll give a brief overview of the actual political event I'm talking about, and then we'll dive into aspects of the attack, including what were the tweets that were sent, what were the accounts that were involved, and how did they actually obtain thousands of IP addresses in order to attack a Twitter service like Twitter. I'll briefly go into some mitigation mechanisms, and then we'll conclude for the rest of this day. So back in December, there was this Russian parliamentary election, and basically what was happening is as soon as the election results came out, people turned to Twitter to start discussing things like purported fraud or the possibility of actually organizing protests in response to the election results. And because these were happening outside of people's immediate social graph and basically to Russia at large, they started using things called hashtags or trending topics on Twitter. So one of those is shown below. It translates roughly to triumphal, which is a square in Russia where people are actually going to organize a protest. And because anybody can actually post to these hashtags, they're actually open to attack. And so what actually happened is thousands of spam accounts came and started posting about 500,000 tweets. And we'll get into the details of like how this was launched in just a moment. But the goals of the attack were twofold. The first is censorship, in the sense that they want to prevent people that were actually searching for information about the election, like what were the results or what are people's opinions, to only see the content that the attackers want. And the second is almost astroturfing in the sense that they actually want to transform the sentiment of the message away from what was a real discussion about the election results towards actually inflammatory comments of people that were being critical of the government or the election. So kind of the first step into going and diving into this attack is actually identifying who are the culprits behind it in terms of the bots involved. So what we do is, based on a couple of media reports of hashtags that were attacked, in specific that triumphal one, which Brian Krebs reported on, we looked at other hashtags that people were posting to kind of get the entire spectrum of what was involved in the Russian election. And so we come up with about 20 hashtags that we know people were posting to, and they're shown here. And we have a cutoff at about 5,000 accounts had to have been involved in a hashtag for us to analyze it. So at the top, we have about 20,000 people talking about catastrophe, and on the very bottom, we have people talking about a prominent blogger that was arrested and some news media. So once we have all of these attacks, we need to actually identify the bots that are inside of that. And we use Twitter's own internal suspension algorithm. So if you query an account, you can simply see whether it's been suspended. We perform our analysis retroactively. So basically, 1 month after this attack had happened, Twitter had weeded out most of the accounts that were involved. And so we could just use their labeling metric as a mechanism for identifying badness. So from this, we dissect all the accounts that had posted to any of these hashtags into whether they were suspended or not. And for the purpose of this talk, we'll say that suspended accounts are spam, it's just a little easier to refer to, and then the legitimate users as non-spam. So we see actually that spam accounts outnumbered legitimate people that were talking about the Russian election, 25,000 to about just under 21,000. And for each of these accounts, we actually were able to communicate with Twitter and get access to a lot of private data, including the entire tweet history of these accounts, their profiles, like what email did they register with, and other properties like that. We have their entire IP login history, and then also if any of their searches or their tweets were syndicated in a search, we get the ranking in that search result. So we combine all this data, and the first thing we want to look at is, what did the attack actually look like? Did they succeed? Yeah, sure, please interrupt. So on Twitter, you can search for any hashtag or any keyword, and you'll be returned a bunch of tweets. And so if an attack tweet was returned in that, we can see where it was ranked, because sometimes it's real time. So at the time of the query, were it attack tweets in that section?
Okay, you got it, but at the time, you got
it. Yes, exactly. So like I said, the first thing we're really interested in is, did this attack succeed, and what did it look like? So we plotted the total tweet volume over time for both benign and spam accounts. And so you see this nice diurnal pattern for legitimate users. But then during the discussion of the election results, you see this huge spike in activity coming from malicious bots. And then the second day that this happens, it's actually a sustained burst throughout the entire time people are having legitimate conversations. So what we're showing on the left is basically all the tweets that accounts that had at least posted to one hashtag sent. So it's also things that aren't necessarily with the hashtag in it. If we restrict to just the hashtags that were attacked, which is shown on the right, we see an even starker image of basically bots posting almost 1,500 tweets per minute compared to just 100 per minute for legitimate accounts. So in that regard, they succeeded in this attack. They completely drowned out legitimate content if you were doing kind of a real-time query as who is posting to this hashtag. The other fascinating thing about how the attack looks is if you look at all the activity prior to December 5th and December 6th, which is when we're analyzing this attack, the vast majority of spam accounts were completely dormant. So they've been sitting idle for all this time basically in preparation specifically for this attack, compared to legitimate users that are basically posting, say, every other day on Twitter. So apart from this kind of shape of the tweets that were sent, we also wanted to know, where did the accounts actually come from? How do you acquire 25,000 accounts on Twitter? Are they compromised? Are they legitimate? Different aspects like this. So the first thing we looked at were basic account properties tied to everyone that was registered. And so for the spam accounts, we found that 99.5% all had MailRU email addresses. And 95% of these are verified. So this means Twitter at one point sent them in the email a URL that you had to click on, and then the attacker actually clicked on that URL and verified it. So in addition to having 25,000 Twitter accounts, they also have 25,000 MailRU email addresses. And even furthermore, they also have 25,000 unique IP addresses that they use to circumvent some of Twitter's restrictions on, say, registering 1,000 accounts from one IP would get you banned very quickly. So another aspect of this is actually the bots formed a cohesive social graph. So the median account had about 122 friends and followers, and 80% of those directed to other bots that were involved in the attack. So this leads us to believe that it was just one party who controlled all 25,000 of these accounts and used them to basically come up with this kind of civil network, potentially to inflate the importance of the account and make people think they're more believable. And the last thing is that these weren't just registered basically up to the day of the attack. We see it going basically as far back as 7 months. So this was either planned out far in advance, or actually, as we'll show, we believe these were actually purchased from a service that has been registering them for many months at a time. So because we had this reliance on Twitter's suspension algorithm, we wanted to verify their results to make sure that we weren't missing other accounts that were involved in the attack. And so what we do is develop a classifier that tries to identify some very specific patterns that happened in the accounts that were involved due to the software that was registering the accounts. So these are like very common names that were used and basically very strange patterns that don't exist in legitimate accounts that are easily identifiable in these spam accounts. So kind of a flaw of the software. And so we present this kind of as an alternative to how Twitter suspends accounts. And so we ran it on all the accounts that had ever tweeted to one of those hashtags, and the account registration times are shown below. So we see as far back as 7 months, you see this huge spike in registrations, and then it pans out for a while. 2 months later, another huge spike. So these are all very anomalous activities tied to the registration of the accounts used in the attack. So one of the questions we had is then, well, we have this nice classifier. Can we find any other accounts that maybe weren't using the attack but still match this pattern? And the answer is overwhelmingly yes. So we got access to every account that's been registered at Twitter with a mail or email address in the past year. So there's about millions and millions of these. And so we run our classifier over all of it, and what you see on the bottom is relatively constant non-spam signups from legitimate users, and that's shown in black, over the course of the year. And then in blue, we see the spam logins that were that match the same criteria of the accounts using the attack. And you see, again, these huge spikes in anomalous activity, but in this case, like in 1 to 2 days, the amount of accounts that were used in the attack are actually registered. So many more accounts are being registered that were used in the attack. And that's kind of one of the big important takeaways of this paper. So in total, we identify about 1 million accounts that register and match these patterns, and the majority haven't been suspended by Twitter. So they're flying under the radar, and this is specifically because they have zero friends, zero followers, and zero tweets. They're basically just dormant and likely sitting there, as we believe, because they're waiting to be purchased by somebody else and used in a spam campaign. So we also did some just analysis to make sure our classifier worked okay, and we found basically 4% were false positives. So our number of accounts that are spam really should be treated as an estimate, but it's still almost 1 million compared to the 3% that were actually used in the attack. So there's this likelihood that, yeah, please go ahead. False positive is basically we manually looked at the set of accounts we classified, and then we looked at their behavior to try to identify. No, we did a sample of these. So apart from that, what we think was going on here with all 1 million of these accounts is that there's actually some program out there that is handling all the registration, and you simply sell these to people like the service I showed earlier, which is like 1,000 accounts for $7, and they handle all the aspects of registration, and then when the account gets handed over, that's when you start forming your social graph, or that's when you start tweeting. So the other question we had is, once you have all these accounts, how do you actually access Twitter without tripping some sort of intrusion detection rule? And so we looked at the IP addresses that these bots were using. So if you look at legitimate users that were tweeting about the Russian election, 56% of them come from Russia, and the remainder come from majorly the United States and then a couple others through Europe. In contrast, all the logins for the bots, only 1% came from Russia. The biggest country was about 13% from Japan, and then we see lots in Mexico, Brazil, and Poland. So typically what you'd think of as compromised hosts located around the globe. In addition to basically looking at the geolocation, we wanted to look at a couple other aspects. So like how many hosts really do they have under their control? So we took a brief snapshot at the highest peak of the attack to understand how many unique IPs do we see in our logs. Because of DHCP churn, if you look at the entire landscape over the past 7 months, you far inflate the number of IP addresses. So we looked at one day to try to mitigate that type of churn, and we see 11,000 unique IP addresses were available to the attacker. So these are tens of thousands of hosts at their disposal, basically at a moment's notice for this attack. And then we looked at whether any of these hosts had previously been flagged for other malicious behavior, like sending spam and appearing in the spam house XBL blacklist, as well as the CBL blacklist. We find that 39% actually overlap with those blacklists. And what this tells us is that there's this intimate relationship between the hosts that these attackers are using for political censorship and also for the purposes of distributing malware or distributing email. So that's really the takeaway from this talk is the spam marketplace is being used for more than just spam. It can also be used for a multitude of other attacks, so long as you just have the funds to do it. So the last thing I want to talk about today is some potential mitigation mechanisms that Twitter has in place right now. So like I said, if you had a real-time search where all you do is you show things linearly, this tech would work. You're outproducing legitimate users 10 to 1 who are posting the hashtag, so your traffic is always going to be basically pegged at the peak so long as you're outproducing. So Twitter offers this alternative to a real-time search, which is called relevance ranked. And so what it does is when I make a query, it integrates my personal social graph as well as my interests to try to rank content that is relevant to me. And then other people that are produced searches will have their own ranking as well. So we had access to a bunch of these searches that were performed during the attack for both real-time and relevance. So relevance is the default, so we have about 1 million queries for that, and then real time we have about 200,000 queries. And so we can look for tweets that were produced by accounts we know were bots, and where did they fall in the search ranking. We find that in the relevance ranked searches, there was 64% less spam. So this type of integration of the social graph and trying to basically weed out civil accounts does work, but I'd like to end with just a couple caveats. So this isn't just a one-time attack. This actually has continued to persist in other avenues. So recently there was, for Ai Weiwei, he was arrested about 2 months ago. And during the course of people talking about it on Twitter, they adopted a hashtag. And again, thousands of bots swarmed the hashtag and did a similar attack to what happened in the Russian election. And to this day, the Free Tibet hashtag continues to be attacked, where if you go on Twitter right now and you go to the real-time search tab, and type in Free Tibet, you'll see basically thousands of Chinese bots attacking this hashtag. And so despite these kind of real-time or relevance-based search metrics, it's not really deterring people from carrying out these types of attacks. So in conclusion, what I've shown today is that social media is becoming a prominent target of censorship because of its impact in political engagement and dissent. But that traditional requirements of controlling somebody's network aren't necessary. You can actually attack the service from within. And so to do this, people are actually turning to the spam ecosystem, where we already have the infrastructure necessary for accounts and compromised hosts. And in fact, millions of these are available for purchase right now. And while we do have some relief from relevance-based metrics, these mitigations aren't really impacting the attacks right now, and they continue to persist. So with that, I'll conclude and open for questions.
So when you said that there was thousands and thousands of these accounts sitting dormant, you said they all had zero followers, no social network, but the ones that were used in the attack did have a social network.
Yes.
So do you have any data on when those networks were formed so you could actually tie it to when those accounts were purchased?
Yes, loosely. So basically it's sometimes a month after the accounts are registered that we start seeing the social graph integrating and also IP addresses that were foreign to the ones that were originally logging into the accounts. So we see both a change in sophistication. So if you look at, there was a unique IP for every account that was registered, But for the attack, there was a lot of overlap in the IP addresses that were used. So there was a drop in the level of sophistication there, and we can also see when all the bots actually started to come together. And it was in stages. They purchased about 1,000, started integrating those, and then a couple months later integrated a new set and things like that. So we do see this kind of progressive behavior that leads us to believe that they were purchased.
But that graph and everything started to form well before the election?
Yes.
So the network was available in anticipation of an attack like this.
Yeah, but there was also actually election-oriented tweets in some preceding months. So there were some bloggers that were posting about basically the Russian government, and some of the bots were actually used back then to do it. So there's kind of this continued history of this type of activity from these accounts. It wasn't just a one-time thing.
So I want questions. So can you say more about the false positives? For example, I'm wondering if somebody has no followers, no friends, what's the legitimate use of that? Is it because people just register things and they forget? Or are they just, seems funny?
Mm-hmm. So for our classifier, we didn't embed any notion of how many friends or followers you had or how old the account was. We use those purely as verification metrics. The classifier just worked on some weird naming relics that appeared in the bots, and that's why we got false positives. There aren't many, say, legitimate accounts that have no followers, no friends, no tweets.
Okay.
So there.
All right. Also, it seems to be a pretty difficult problem, right? Because if you have 3% or 4%, it sounds like a very small number, but if you have a lot of accounts, it's mm-hmm. still,
But it, even then, if you include the error margin, you'd be at most 10% of those would be mm-hmm. fake. You still have almost 1 million accounts that were for fake.
So something a little more Twitter technical. Did you look in your analysis what the applications were that the people or that the spammers used to send their tweets? Were
you
all going through the web page or the mobile interface, or did they have their own applications where they have convenient APIs to just post to their?
Mm-hmm. Overwhelming, it's the web.
Okay.
With this analysis that you've done, you looked at and created a classifier to pick up the mail.ru accounts, right? You didn't say any of this in your paper, and I don't know if you're able to, but do you have any insights or ideas on how to make more of a general detector that doesn't just look at the mail.ru and for those special proclivities that are in the names there
mm-hmm.
to pick up some of maybe dormant accounts that are registered by somebody else?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of work in this area, some of it from Santa Barbara and a couple other universities, in building classifiers that detect spam accounts. So really I would defer closely to those works. But I think it's a generally hard problem because when you have a brand new account that registers, you don't have much information available to you, especially in this case when it's a unique IP. And really it was a quirk that we caught with the accounts that allowed us to do this that will easily disappear if we start talking about it. So I don't know if there's really a great way right now to tackle brand new accounts.
Really nice talk, really nice work. So I was under the impression that most of the users on Twitter are followers, right? So they just follow a bunch of other people, right?
People I think have on average 20 or 40 followers per account.
Per account, so yeah, okay. So I'm trying to get a sense of how effective would the relevance-based filtering actually work for most people, right?
Right. So outside of the social graph, it does integrate some personal interests, but definitely for a brand new user, I think they'll basically default to other properties like, did lots of people retweet this content, or is this person followed by a lot of people? So you can also integrate other metrics that basically inform notoriety.
I see. Thanks. That clarifies.
Thanks for the talk. I wonder if at the API, first of all, were these bots automated through the Twitter API?
All through the web.
Okay. Thanks.